Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We've been talking about the SEC and the Big Ten. Are they going to ruin it? Are they greedy? Do they want it all for themselves? How many automatic bids do they need? We've got some people lined up who want to weigh in. John Wilner is our guest, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. He is the star of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. We're going to have him on. Actually going to bring on some callers while I have him on. We'll do it a little different because that's how this show rolls. How are you, my friend?
I appreciate that introduction that could not have been further from the truth, but I'm good, thanks.
Hey, before, we're going to take a couple calls because we've been talking about the SEC and the Big Ten. What are they trying to do? What's your simple answer? What are Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti up to?
They want 16 automatic bids for a 14-team playoff is what they want.
Right.
I mean, that's every breadcrumb they throw out in front of us says, you know, we don't care about competitive equity. We want to own every spot possible in the playoff. And we'll see. I think they'll probably end up getting their way or most of their way because they do have all the best brands, and ESPN is going to want, you know, ESPN wants the best brands on TV. So it works in their favor.
Is there any chance that they come to their senses and go, look, this isn't great for the ecosystem? Or will they just go, nope, this, we're taking it all for ourselves? I mean, is there any shot that they have a conscience as they move towards that model?
No, I don't think so, at least not voluntarily. The way they get a conscience is if they're threatened with lawsuits because of some kind of exclusionary policy. I mean, you know, one of the potential outcomes of all this is that the Group of Five does not have an automatic bid. And so then you would have basically five out of nine conferences with no guaranteed access to the playoff. And that could result in a lawsuit or the threat of a lawsuit. That is really, to me, the best bet to keeping them in line is the threat of legal action.
Well, maybe we need that. I want to take a couple calls because before I get into, like, you know, what you think's happening this weekend, Jonathan Smith's return, but maybe you get to participate a little bit with some listener interaction. Let's go to Jonathan, who's in Portland. Jonathan, you are on the platform. What's on your mind, man?
Thanks, long-time listener. Love your show. You know, my view on this is it's not about Big Ten versus SEC. It's about Fox and ESPN. And I think, you know, what you said about legal action is pretty much 100% correct, because right now we've just allowed ESPN and Fox to engage in what I don't want to say anything legalese exactly, but it doesn't feel right. It feels like they went and butchered the existing conference layout in exactly the time when we actually had conference championships that meant something, because you had a division, you had to win your side of the conference, and then you went to the conference championship, and if those
sure.
people all went to, the whole season kind of feels like a playoff. And now you've got the SEC and the Big Ten where not everybody plays each other, and it's going to be this weird, mysterious algorithm as to which of the top three teams in the championship.
Yeah, you're breaking up. But, Wilner, let me dovetail off of that. You know, what if the SEC and the Big Ten go, we're just not going to play anybody else? We'll play our regular season, and then we'll do cross-conference matchups with the Big Ten. Does that lock other teams out of the playoff, or how does that affect college football?
Well, that's the threat. And certainly the caller is right that ESPN and Fox, they're kind of like the grand masters behind college football here. ESPN all in with the SEC, Fox all in with the Big Ten. So they could try to lock everybody out and, you know, just take their ball and go play their own game. That's the threat that they've used to kind of get their own way. I am a little skeptical of that because I think politically that would be tough. In, let's say, in a state like Kentucky, where you've got a school, Louisville, that's in the ACC and a school, Kentucky, in the SEC, you know, and all of a sudden Kentucky is going to go off and play a different game, you know, then state politicians start getting involved. So that's why I'm a little skeptical that ultimately they would break away, but they are certainly using that threat to their advantage.
I want to take one more, and then I got questions for you. Ken's in Portland. Ken, go ahead. What's on your mind?
What I wanted to say is from Roy Kramer to Mike Slive to Greg Sankey, the SEC has leveraged all their advantages to be the top conference. But I think that Sankey is smart enough to realize that with NIL replacing the SEC Bagman, with the expansion of the playoff, and with the push to move from an 8-game schedule, which benefits the SEC in their rankings unfairly, to a 9-game schedule, they have never been more powerful, and they never will be more powerful than what they are now. And so he's leaning on the system to get what he can get now, because I think we're going to see over time there's going to be a dilution. There's not going to be those super teams. It's not going to be as easy as it used to be for an Alabama to rise up and dominate college football like it did, you know. And so I think that's what's happening here. He's leveraging. He's a smart guy. He's leveraging his opportunity to get what he can get now.
Yeah, give me an idea, Wilner. What do you see there? Do you think the SEC and the Big Ten fear that there'll be more parity?
No, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that piece of it. They've got all the best schools, basically, except for Notre Dame. The reason, but they do want to keep their hold on power. There's no doubt about that, which is why college football does not have a commissioner or a czar. And if there was a commissioner that had some real authority, a lot of the idiocy and insanity that we see would not exist. But by the very act of creating a commissioner, the SEC and the Big Ten would give up their hegemony, their authority over the whole sport, and they don't want to do that. Right now, Sankey and Petitti are running the whole thing. So why would they allow a commissioner to take over? They wouldn't. So it's going to continue to be, in a way, a lawless, leaderless sport industry.
I'm fascinated by what happens next. Do you have a sense of what kind of authority Sankey and Petitti, those two conference commissioners, have to make changes to the playoff? Do they need the executive council, the management committee of the CFP to sign off, or did they negotiate some extra power and leverage in that last round of negotiations?
Well, my understanding is it's pretty much up to them and ESPN, right? So the current CFP, and the timelines are a little difficult to follow. The CFP that we're going to get this season is for 12 teams is also on the books for next season. But after next season, so starting with the fall of 26, it's a new contract. They have signed that contract with ESPN. They know how much money is involved. They know how much money is going to get distributed to each conference, but they could still, you know, the format itself is something that's got to be figured out. They could decide to go to 14 teams or 16. They could decide to give the SEC and the Big Ten, you know, automatic spots. All that's got to be worked out, but that starts with the 2026 season, and the power to make any changes is basically just with ESPN, the SEC, and the Big Ten, and everybody else has got to take what they're given.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. Pivoting to the weekend of action in college football, you're headed to the state of Oregon, Friday night game, Michigan State, Oregon, and I believe you're then getting in the car and driving to Washington, Michigan. You're going to get to see games, four teams. What prompts you to see those games? What's the appeal?
The main appeal is I get two for the price of one, because I get Oregon on Friday night and Washington on Saturday afternoon. I was a little worried the Huskies were going to get the 12:30 spot. That would have been an early drive for me on Saturday out of the Portland area. But they're 4:30 on NBC, so it works out really well. That's the main reason I'm doing it. I get to see Oregon, Washington, and both Michigan schools, including Jonathan Smith. It's you know, it's like old days of the Pac-12 with Smith and Autzen.
I think Smith coming to Autzen. How mad should Oregon State fans be at him, or what's the outside view of that? Because I might be too close to this with A lot of listeners angry at him for dropping his stuff at Goodwill. Others saying, gosh, if there's no loyalty to your alma mater, where is their loyalty? Others yet going, hey, it's show business, not show friends. What's the view from 20,000 feet on Jonathan?
I think the view is that if the Pac-12 hadn't disintegrated, he wouldn't have taken the job. But he was worried about what was going to happen, and, you know, just for his own coaching career and getting stuck in a situation where he would never have, you know, because of what was going on with the Pac-12, he would not have the resources to win at the level he wanted to win at and eventually to maybe move up. You know, I don't know that he was ever going to be a lifer at Oregon State. You could certainly argue he took the program as far as he could take it and did a lot of great things for Oregon State, and it was time to move on. Now, I'd also say I think he made a mistake because I think Michigan State was a long job for him. He is going to get caught in the grind of the Big Ten at a mid-level program right there, like middle of the hierarchy there, and it's going to be hard for him to ever do anything extraordinary or exceptional at Michigan State, in my opinion.
Wilner, you know, when you say extraordinary or exceptional, where do you see Michigan State's ceiling in that conference as it stands?
I mean, every once in a while, maybe they end up in the top two or three, but you just start counting. It's going to be hard on any given year. Are they going to be better than Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, USC, Washington, Oregon? I mean, you could argue they are at best seventh in the pecking order just in terms of resources, recruiting prowess, all that kind of thing. He's a really good coach. There's no doubt about that. A really good coach. But I just don't know that he's going to be able to get the players he needs to compete with the schools that are in that conference. It's brutal.
Oregon and Dan Lanning, they would like very much to matter in the college football playoff, not just make it, I think, but rattle around it. And, you know, in the back of their mind, they're thinking national championship. They want to get Phil Knight that title. How far away do you think Oregon is? You've seen Georgia and Alabama play. We're going to get to see Oregon and Ohio State in a couple of Saturdays, but where do you see the Ducks?
I don't know that Oregon could ever get there, to be honest. I just don't know that it's possible, and I also am not sure that it's Oregon's fault. So much of college football is dependent upon demographics, and where are all the really good 300-pound offensive and defensive linemen? They're in the South and in the Midwest. So the whole personnel pipeline skews. I mean, that is one of the main reasons the SEC has had the dominant run that it's had, is that's where all the linemen are. And you can't win a playoff without a bunch of NFL draft picks on your lines of scrimmage. Now, Oregon does, I think, a really good job of getting as close to that point as they can. But until I see them line up in a semifinal or final against Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, those schools, LSU, when they're rolling, I just don't know that they're going to ever have it up front. And I think that that's true of Washington. USC is a little different. I do think USC has some advantages with their tradition, that if they got the right coach, they could potentially win it. But it's hard, and it didn't used to be. You know, this is a shift in population dynamics that's taken place. The West Coast doesn't have as many big, fast players as it used to.
Yeah, you look at Oregon in 2011, Oregon in 2015, and Washington in 2024, the three playoff national championship game participants from the Pacific Northwest were collectively outrushed 853-253 in those three title games. And it was the difference. And as Chip Kelly said, big people beat up little people.
Yeah, they do. And I don't know, you know, Oregon does a great job getting kids out of the South and the Midwest, but are they going to get enough kids in a given year who can play at that level? It's going to be hard. Real hard. But the playoff gives them a certainly a better chance to be relevant. The Ducks should be in the playoff this year. If they're not, I think it's a disappointment. and they probably, Washington and Oregon both, should probably be in the playoff every two or three years with the Big Ten getting, you know, you assume they're going to get about four teams. Those, the Pacific Northwest schools should be in it, you know, on a pretty regular basis. And whether they can get through the quarterfinals, you know, win an opening round game for sure, get through the quarterfinals, that'll be tough. And then it just, I just don't see them ever winning those last two.
You had a piece on Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner today, and the role she played in landing Gonzaga. Big week for the Pac-12. Can you share with us a little bit of her role and how important she was to that?
Well, it sounds to me like, and I didn't realize this as things were breaking, what was that, Monday, Tuesday, she was the real linchpin on the whole thing. She flew to Spokane last weekend on her own without her consulting firm, Navigate, and basically spent 10 hours in Spokane on Sunday with Gonzaga's president, athletic director, and the basketball coaches hammering out a deal. And it was an ultimate example of what personal relationships mean in college sports and how you can get stuff done in person that you can't get stuff done remotely. And she's known Gonzaga's athletic director for decades. I think that that really helped with the trust factor in the negotiations. And she got it done. And it's a huge, I mean, getting Gonzaga is a gigantic deal for the Pac-12, right? I mean, that is a massive brand that everybody across the country is like, oh, Gonzaga's in the Pac-12. It's that big a deal.
Now, as they look for that eighth school that plays all sports, or maybe a ninth, they're going to go to market with their media rights. I'm sure they're going to get, you know, the media companies to model deals that include a variety of schools. What is that range in your mind? You know, obviously I think about Memphis and Tulane and UNLV, but how far outside that scope do you think they'll go in potentially modeling deals?
I think they'll be as creative as they could possibly be, as creative as their network or media partners will let them be. I think the fact that they can go down the streaming path will add to their optionality. I'm also not sure that any school that's out there, whether it's Memphis on down, is going to make a real difference in their valuation. I mean, I basically think that it is set with the seven they have, plus, you know, the seven football schools plus Gonzaga. I think whatever that media valuation is will not change regardless of who that eighth or ninth school is. It's going to just, you know, they'll build in some escalator clauses so everybody will basically stay the, you know, not lose money by getting the extra schools. But I don't see anybody that's going to all of a sudden turn this into a bonanza that it isn't.
UNLV, that memo of understanding, binding, or is there some wiggle room for UNLV here?
I am not sure, but I don't think that UNLV's got any wiggle room. I think that they've signed a grant of rights. Not 100% sure. It's the way it sounds to me. But it could be, with both the Mountain West and the American Conference, that there's a time factor. Like, the grant of rights starts on X date. And so, you know, maybe in two or three weeks, those schools could still leave. I don't really know. It's a little bit murky. I'm also not 100% sure the Pac-12 would want UNLV at this point. Certainly, they're not going to pay $25 million to get them, right? And that's what the Mountain West did. The Pac-12 was, I think they were smart not paying that, because UNLV is not worth that much money. Again, there's nobody out there that's going to materially change the media value of the group that they have. Why not get Sacramento State? They'll come for free. You give them like $10 a year, and everybody else gets an extra share. I mean, there's just more money for everybody else.
Look at you. You're thinking like Greg Sankey now. Look at that. Make them don't come back to Earth. Make them find you on the moon. All right,
there,
John Wilner, I appreciate you, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow as you head out to, up to or down to Autzen Stadium, and I'll catch you then. Thanks, Wilner.
Thanks, my friend. I'll see you.
There he goes. He's coming to the Pacific Northwest. He's on a tour. He's going to be at Michigan State, Oregon tomorrow night. He'll be at Michigan, Washington on Saturday night. Stephen Vaughn and I will give our picks on the Pacific Northwest games in the next segment. Stephen, I wrestled with Washington, Michigan. I want to see if we ended up in the same place. Leave it here. Our Big Splash is next as well.